Hey guys, welcome back. BDCKR here. We're back with our weekly Q&A videos. This is season 11, episode 12, the season of the lost characters. Is that
lost challenge characters?
Lost challenge characters. Okay.
Right.
So this is both video and podcast. You can check out the links in the description if you're on YouTube to get this on a bunch of different podcasting platforms, which is a great way to watch it. But with this season especially, I guess you've been putting some extra effort into the visuals. So what will people be looking at today if they're watching?
Killer Frost regime.
Cool. So her passive is Polar Vortex, which is Killer Frost surrounds her opponents in bitter cold, reducing all healing effects by 90%, and upon special activation, opponents' power generation and speed are reduced by 50%. She's got 700 attack, 1250 health as her base stats.
Right. So it invites the comparison. There's only two Killer Frost skins. So it is very tempting to compare them directly. And I gotta tell you, she does not hold up very well against the other Killer Frost.
Yeah.
So the other Killer Frost has higher stats, 850 instead of 700. Now, combined, they're significantly higher, but she's got slightly lower health, 1200. It's still decent for the amount of total stat that she's got.
Yeah.
But much better to be 850 and 1200 than 700 and 1250. Killer Frost Prime, the other Killer Frost, has a two-hit combo ender, and I believe has a four-hit swipe combo. So both are better than Killer Frost regime.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to look at the passive. This passive, Polar Vortex, they're basically sort of the flip side of each other, right? So Regime Killer Frost or Killer Frost Regime reduces healing effects. Killer Frost Prime reduces power generation.
Yeah.
And sure, Killer Frost Regime reduces power generation when she does her special one. But come on. I mean, power generation is everybody has power generation, right? A constant power generation debuff is much more useful because everybody generates power. Only a small number of opponents will be healing. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, not everything counts as healing. So things that we would have thought intuitively are healing, like Lextra Gauntlet's regeneration, fourth orb gear set, that's regeneration. It's not healing. They don't count. It has no effect on them. Speed reduction, super useful on this team. Both the Killer Frost will do it. It stops. What's interesting is when you do it, where I really notice a difference is that when I do the special one or special two, I mean, if I'm looking to shatter some gears,
mm-hmm.
that slowdown is enough that I don't have to worry about the opponent countering immediately with their own special before I can tag out, which happens sometimes. Never happens when you've got the slowdown effect from Killer Frost. So I think the biggest problem with Killer Frost regime is that her stats are low enough that she needs breakthrough or augmentations if you want her to be competitive and useful.
Mm-hmm.
And the question then becomes, all right, so do you really want to commit to the time for breakthrough or spend the time that you've used up to get valuable augmentations?
Yeah. The one good thing is that damage augmentations are relatively less valuable than sort of crit chance and crit damage ones.
Yeah.
But also, if you're augmenting, damage is usually the one that you go for. So it's still maybe like the third most valuable augmentation resource out of four.
Yeah. Five. If you count XP.
That's true. I don't count XP, but
Right.
I should.
Right. So her special two has three hits. It can knock out more than one opponent in theory, but you're looking at her. She's elite seven, level 50. And in theory, she can knock out more than one opponent, but her damage is low enough that often she won't even knock out the opponent that's in front of her.
Yeah.
The healing debuff works even when she's not active in the fight, just like Killer Frost Prime's power generation debuff works when she is not active in the fight. What else? I think that's really it. The way this team is set up. So right now, again, we've got the usual Rebirth Raven, Hawk Girl as the support characters and two, like, sort of support plus. They do more than just support.
Mm-hmm.
Rebirth Raven is great. And so our most common strategy is to hit the opponent with a special from our special specialists who we slot in with these other two characters all the time. And you can see that we always can tag in Raven before they spend their power if we've done a freeze. Or not a freeze. It's technically not a freeze because it doesn't count for Necron Sight. It just slows them down. They're not frozen.
Yeah.
They're just slowed.
Mm-hmm.
What would you call that?
I just would say slowed, yeah.
They're cold, though. But there's something... I'm not sure
chilled?
What, chilled. I guess that... Yeah, see, I was looking for something that would fit with her...
Yeah.
Sort of theme. Her cold theme.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, not a great character. I mean, there's no great loss. She's been available in the Icebreaker... Is it the Icebreaker pack? Wait, no, which is the one that has the two Killer Frosts and somebody else?
I do not pay nearly enough attention to attention to pack names. I said pension.
Pension.
attention to pack names to answer that question.
Yeah, so not the greatest. And you'll see in the description of this video the list of all the challenge characters, the lost challenge characters that we've done so far this season.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we get into our first question, there's one thing that I wanted to talk about with you, which is that we sometimes talk about events. We are just a little over 1 week away from the eclipse.
Yes.
Which is cool.
That is
cool. And so I know for a lot of people, they are not going to be able to reach a totality for the eclipse, which is the area where there's full coverage. So you're going to be in sort of the band around it where it's still an eclipse, but it's not as cool of an eclipse.
Well, it's definitely different. I was reading that, so where we are in the Toronto area, it's going to be like 99.9% totality. Mm-hmm. And apparently that 0.1%
makes a big difference.
It's huge because the sun is so bright that you don't get to, it's bright enough that it obscures the corona.
Yeah.
And if, so.
But you and me are both hitting totality separate.
Right. So I guess there's no chance that we're going to be doxing ourselves because I'm going to be in the Niagara Falls area, and there's going to be like
millions of people
there.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be attractive.
Yeah.
Because it's already got its own sort of built-in tourist.
Yeah.
Attraction.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
There's double reasons to go. So I'm going to share something. And normally I hope that people sort of take this to heart, and we say it a decent amount, which is like, don't take us as primary sources, right? Even if we were saying something that we believe to be information and factual, we're not sitting here with the sources out in front of us, right? We are not a great place for you to get primary information. If something feels interesting or worthwhile to know about and you're hearing it from us, we should be the sort of first stopping point before you look into it yourself, right?
Right.
And that's for basically anybody, right? Short of sort of people who are really that you trust that are doing research and presenting it to you in a way that sort of removes your need to trust them because you can very easily verify and fact check them. Everybody you should be treating that way, but especially that, and especially for this thing that I'm about to tell you, because this is sort of something that concerns your health and safety, so you should always be triple checking. But if you're in the totality, during the full totality, when it's fully covered,
right,
you are apparently able to, and in fact should, take off your eclipse glasses or whatever.
Because you won't be able to see anything.
Using for visual protection.
Yeah.
So you actually need to. So it's just during the totality. So it's not, it's only during this type of eclipse, the solar eclipse, and it's only within that narrow band of space and band of time.
Right.
But this is something where if you are going to be in that position, it is good to know in advance, because otherwise you're not going to see anything.
Right.
So you actually, to get the best views, it is recommended that you remove your eclipse glasses.
Right.
And that is one of those things that if you don't trust us, that's a very scary thing to, or if you trust us sort of implicitly and you don't do your own research, so, it's a very scary thing because you could damage your eyesight permanently if we're wrong.
But it's one of those things where it's true in so far as it is true, but there's a huge danger that if you look at it not during the totality, so there's going to be a time where you're looking at it during totality, and it switches out of that.
Yeah.
That's actually bad. Like, if you happen to be staring and continue to stare at the totality as it finishes,
as it breaks, the eclipse finishes,
then that would actually be bad. Mm-hmm. You know what it's like? I don't know why I'm making this connection. It's like that advice that you get for first aid that they say, you don't need, when you get a cut, you don't need topical antibiotic.
Yeah.
The Vaseline is enough, that the oily barrier is what protects the area and lets it heal.
Yeah.
So the problem is, I've seen people's medicine cabinets. I've seen their nasty jars of Vaseline and how people have been sticking their fingers in it.
Yeah.
So it's great that the idea of Vaseline will protect it.
Yeah.
what's to stop you from introducing more junk into it because your Vaseline is dirty?
That's true.
So in my mind, so yeah, you don't need topical antibiotic, but the advantage of topical antibiotic, or I guess Vaseline in a tube if they sell it like that,
is the way that you're...
Well, you're less likely to be putting a glop of petroleum jelly with bacteria in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if anything, this is one of those cases where it probably makes, in my mind, it makes sense to have a tube of topical antibiotic ointment because it's the oily part. The cream, it just absorbs. It doesn't offer the barrier advantage.
Yeah.
But that the ointment, it's better. It's almost better to have it expired because you don't want to necessarily have, be introducing antibiotics everywhere, right? Because then you introduce the idea of resistance. But you want it to be at least clean enough that you're not, you know, you don't know who's been sticking their fingers in that tub.
That's true.
And what their fingers have looked like when they were sticking it
in. Or even if you do, you know, if you're thinking about every time you've ever stuck your fingers in that tub and think about how recently you've washed your hands before each one. Yeah.
So when you say, it's the same idea to me that you can say that it's safe to look at the sun during totality. Well, be real careful that you're not still staring at it when it goes out, or that you're not looking at it too early where you're staring because you think, well, it feels like this is probably as dark as it'll get.
That's
as
true.
As it starts dimming, and then you're staring right at that chunk of sun that's burning a hole in your retina.
That's a good point. One thing that I learned that was interesting, because I was telling somebody this and then they were cross-referencing and verifying for themselves, which was that you can't use cameras and stuff. You can't look through their viewfinders without having protection on, like lens protection on, and even like even if you're wearing the like eclipse glasses, you can't look through the viewfinder because
it'll burn.
It focuses it. It focuses it differently. So, you know, theoretically your phone screen, right, it is displaying just the actual, like just an image on your phone screen. It can't get brighter than like the pixels of your phone.
Right.
So a digital viewfinder, something where you're getting a representation of it, but not just seeing sort of through a lens. Right. But anything through a lens, you actually need to be even extra careful because it could potentially be focusing the rays in a way that increases the intensity and is, you know, still ends up damaging your eyes, even if you're wearing
protection. I can't stress enough what you said earlier about we are not real, you know,
sources. We're not primary sources.
We're not authorities on this.
Yeah.
But to me, if you're looking through a viewfinder, everything looks smaller than in real life, then the chance of it being concentrated is not that great. It would be if it's magnified. So it's the idea. So like, you know, when you have people with glasses and they try to use the sunlight to focus and start a fire, if they are using that for reading, that will magnify it. Yeah. If they are distance glasses, it'll do the opposite. It'll diffuse it and you'll be doing the opposite. It'll be less bright in that window where the sun comes through your glasses than it would be if you weren't. So it feels like to me that's not entirely, there's something wrong with that unless you've magnified it, that looking through the viewfinder of the camera will be no worse than just looking at it.
You're not magnifying it though, you're focusing it. You're getting a wider range. So the viewfinder, if the viewfinder starts wider and ends narrower, even if it's a smaller image that's being displayed to you, you're getting all of the sort of catchment of that larger area and it's focused on a smaller region.
Oh, I guess so. That makes
sense.
And
so the important part is that, you know, you're taking, let's say like 1 square inch of light and you're focusing it on 1 square centimeter of retina. It doesn't need to burn your whole eye all at once.
That's
it
true.
Only needs to burn that very all small right. region of it.
I'm glad we talked about it. So this, my original plan was I was going to try to do like a time lapse. You know how we have that little outro?
Yeah.
I was going to try to make a new one and have the eclipse and do a time lapse thing. And I realized that I can't do that. One, because the filters that they give you for your cameras, unless you're willing to spend something really expensive, I have to get something that would fit on the camera, a camera to sit, or I'd have to put it over the phone and it would be crap.
Yeah.
And the other part I realized is that I was reading up on this, the sensor on the phone is just so small that when you zoom, and I tested this, when you zoom, you get just crap. There's no visual, like, sort of very little detail that you get. And it's just like a little bit of a blob, as opposed to if you got like a true magnifier.
Yeah, because you're talking about digital zoom versus optical zoom, where the optical zoom of a lens is literally just displaying the full resolution of your sensor, and you're just picking sort of the frame that is getting displayed on your sensor, whereas digital zoom with your camera.
There is an optical zoom, but the optical zoom on the camera is so little.
It's 5 times only on ours.
So you hardly see any kind of detail, and you don't get any detail. So I'm going to bring camera, but then the camera doesn't have the same capability or enough memory to really do a proper, video of the moon progressively blocking the sun. So I'm just going to be taking some pictures.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, one of the interesting things about the way that phone cameras work, right, is that the reason why we have those sort of camera arrays on your phone, where you look at the back and there's like 3 cameras on the iPhone, or sometimes even 4, I think. And, you know, our phones have 3 cameras on the back of them.
Do they?
They do. They've got a
telephoto, wide angle,
which is 0.5. They've got a regular one. And because we each have the Pixel 7 Pro, they've got a 5x telephoto.
Right.
So the interesting thing is when you go into your camera apps, you can actually see the default sort of zoom distances often correspond to the actual lenses that you have in your camera.
Right.
And so those are the ones that are optical zoom. That's like a physical process happening. And what's funny is that, you know, oftentimes they will look ever so slightly different and there will be a tiny bit of lag. So depending on what your phone is, especially for a lot of Android phones, Apple, one of the things that Apple does really good is getting the coloring across the different lenses very similar. Mm-hmm. And also in software, doing the transition between each one very subtly. Mm-hmm. But for almost every other camera, and even a bit with Apple, if you really have an eye for it, you can actually see the physical place that the camera is coming from, the perspective shift ever so slightly when you change your zooms, and it goes from one lens to another. And sometimes you can see the color shift, and then sometimes there's like a visible kind of like stutter time, right? Where you're swapping from one to another and they're trying to make it look smooth. But one of the things that's interesting is you've got your sensors and then you've got your sort of cameras, lenses. And what happens now with most like sort of top of the line, nice phone cameras is your sensor is a lot larger than the picture that you're taking. So the highest resolution they will let you take a picture at is oftentimes lower than the resolution of your sensor. And, you know, they don't need you to take up a massive amount of storage space with every picture you're taking. So for most of the time, people want the best sort of balance. They don't just want the best picture. They want a picture that looks nice, but also doesn't take up too much space on your phone.
Right.
And, you know, practically, it's the same reason why, you know, even though there's 4K video on a lot of phones, by default, it's off on a lot of phones because it takes like 4 times as much space per second as like the 1080p video. And for most purposes, you don't need it.
The other place where I think, this kind of occurs to me that there's a maximum capacity for something.
Yeah.
And for functional purposes, they'd be better off not doing it. Batteries. Yeah. So they have a maximum capacity. I think most electronic makers will push the limits of what it is and give you access to the 100% because they want you to think, wow, this is great. I get all this capacity. But if they were to limit it, then you would maybe not be as impressed by the original capacity, but boy, would you be impressed.
Battery health long term would be better. Yeah, because it's the top like 15 and bottom 15 where most of the battery degradation happens when you're working from four. Yeah. I don't know if it's 15, but whatever. There's a narrow bar at the top and bottom where when you're using it at full charge or when you're using it at almost no charge and draining it all the way to zero, that you end up degrading your battery the most.
So it is interesting to me because I think really, I hate Elon Musk for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah.
But the Teslas are really interesting because I remember reading something when there was an
emergency or something.
Some emergency, and remotely they increased the capacity of the cars.
Yeah, they gave access to the full range of the battery.
Right. So that tells me by design, they actually limit the capacity being used.
Yeah.
And that's good for the battery health.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so the sort of overarching point about how phone cameras work is that you end up getting, what they're essentially doing is they're cropping the full size of the sensor and they're giving you a fraction of it. And the one advantage of that is it lets them have, so optical zoom, right? You don't lose any quality, right? Because you're physically, again, you're
oh, so then the digital zoom is better.
Yeah.
Right.
Digital zoom, you always have to lose quality. And so the ways that you can fix that are, you know, in software, you can do post-processing, you can sharpen in post. Yeah. And most cameras are doing that to different extents. You can't really not have that now for phone cameras. The question is, who's I, right? Which set of engineers? Is it Apple's engineers? Is it Google's engineers? Is it Samsung's engineers that you like their sort of creative vision for the most, right? Because they all have different sort of sense of what they want to do with colors and all these other stuff. So you get sort of pictures that have different character from each other. That is noticeable, and you'll prefer one or the other, you know.
It's not, I guess, I think the point is that it's not objectively better.
They're all post-processed.
It's what your preference is for their, sort of their style of improving the appearance.
Yeah.
Their taste.
Yeah. But so, yeah, by having a larger sensor and by, like, cropping it in post, what that lets you do is, to a certain point, once you start doing your digital zoom, there's a certain amount you can zoom in where all it does is it zoom out on your sensor, starts using the whole sensor and just downscales it afterwards.
Right.
And so you get a little bit of digital zoom that is entirely, or not necessarily entirely, I shouldn't say that.
But it doesn't degrade the same way.
But it doesn't degrade the picture quality.
Old digital zoom used to.
And then as you keep doing more digital zoom, that's when you start to really lean on sort of your software and everything else. Because you're essentially, it's the equivalent of you taking a picture on your phone and then pinching and zooming into the picture afterwards.
Right.
And we all know how quickly that sort of... Right. dissolves into like a blurry, pixely mess.
But they didn't know that in old movies. Yeah. Right? So where they, do you ever watch those movies where they say, let's zoom in on that.
Zoom
and let's
enhance.
Focus it.
Yeah.
And let's enhance it. And then all of a sudden, like a picture would appear out of like 4 pixels of somebody's face and all the details. So,
It's one of those funny things where, but if it was shot on film for some reason, if for some reason there was some CCTV footage that was being shot live on film on like 33mm, then you could zoom in quite a bit.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're not answering a lot of questions this week.
We need an answer.
Yeah, we're 22 minutes in almost, but that's our sort of, that's our tech talk for the week. Our first comment comes from K31Wiz.
KeyWiz.
KeyWiz, yes. And they say, I'm pretty sure Harley's attack is not a tag-in for Tantu Tono's bar of power, as I used her without Tantu, and she still gets her bar of power after that attack. It seems like the game counts her tag-in attack like her own basic damage hits. That's the third time of me hearing that from you, and I thought you would notice Harley gets power even with no gear if the attack happens.
Totally fair criticism. This it dovetails nicely with their point to say that we are not... the ultimate authority
on anything.
Sometimes
you're wrong.
Even with Injustice.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is intuitively, it seems like that was the case. And it may not be true. I think that's actually one of the ways we'd have to check it would be to play with her more often and leave her off screen.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we'd have to be checking the gear for everybody that we're facing instead of just checking the gear on the first slot. Opponent's team.
Yeah.
Totally fair. It's possible. I always felt like that the amount of powers that she got was way more than the value you would get from her hits from just hitting them. It totally makes sense because she does have a bunch of hits. If she had some power generating gear, that would be enough potentially to give her. How many? It feels like there's probably a handful of hits. In my mind, I'm picturing the animation.
Yeah.
Would be 5 or 6 hits. Are 5 or 6 hits normally enough to generate bar of power?
Oh, man. I don't know. Maybe that's not. One of those things where it's kind of more of an embodied experience where you feel it when you're playing.
Yeah.
And you have a much better sense of it. But like breaking it down afterwards, the math of it is not intuitive to me.
Yeah. All right. So let's say... 2 swipe combos plus a third hit is usually enough to another hit of the start of a third combo is often enough to generate bar power, I think.
Yeah.
So the combo would have to be, is what, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and a seventh hit?
Mm-hmm.
Then that should... I mean, I'm making this up. I should have probably thought it through before.
Or tested it.
But so if her tag-in passive is like 8 hits, that's within the round. I feel like it's somewhere around the range of 6 to 8 hits.
Yeah.
Then potentially that would make sense if she gets credit for all the hits.
Mm-hmm.
But it always felt like she was getting basically bar power every time she tagged in with her passive. So yeah, definitely worth testing.
Yeah.
Definitely worth testing. I've had the patience too as we're going through because it feels like there's so many more interesting things right now to do.
Yeah.
Because I don't like playing with Harley if I'm just going to leave her off to the side, like on the sidelines.
Yeah.
So then that would be, so Arkhamite Harley Quinn, I would need to have Arkhamite Catwoman, I think, for her damage. Arkhamite Batgirl, you almost have to. But then we'd lose out on Hawkgirl, and then you'd be getting not as much value for... Oh, and the other problem is then, if you're leaving her off the screen, she's going to be generating power slowly, and because you can't see her power bar, you don't know how much she would have been generating anyways.
That's true. It's tough. What you would have to do is have her swapped out for a certain amount of time, not trigger that effect, and then have her swapped out for the same amount of time and trigger that effect. I guess one way you just have her like block or have your character block consistently as the control, right?
That's true, because if it is triggered like basics and you block, then she shouldn't get credit for it.
Yeah.
But she does, though.
Yeah.
Actually, no. But that's not true. So when you do basic attacks and they block, you still get credit for the power generation.
Yeah. Well, we could test it anyways.
Yeah.
So just interesting point. Maybe.
Well, it's interesting that this was a question from this weekend. It dovetails nicely from what we're talking about, how we like to talk a big game. But I'm not sure necessarily that we always know. I think a lot of things we have a good idea about, we're always willing to consider other ideas.
Yeah, I mean, we were wrong, and we learned that we were definitely wrong about how online multiplayer worked, right?
For some of it,
yeah. We were right about a lot, and we were wrong about a few things.
Yes.
And, you know, it was just because we didn't have the information, so we made an educated guess, and it was a mixed bag. I think, we were right. A lot of the stuff that we were right about was relatively obvious, and a lot of the stuff that we were wrong about was relatively subtle, right? But that doesn't sort of change the ratio of what we were right about and wrong about.
Yeah.
A lot of our principles sort of mostly shook out to be useful. We kind of had again that embodied sense of what worked and what didn't work,
right?
But the nuances of it meant that learning about how it actually worked behind the scenes lets you squeeze a little bit more sort of value out of the teams that you're putting in and the matchups that you're facing.
And speaking of not being authorities, let's jump into another question where people are expecting us to know something and we're going to make up something that we are going to believe is as
true
because of our lived experience, but we're also open to the idea that we're not going to be right about this.
So Captain Hayes 1374 says, "Hey BDC Carer, you guys have previously stated that characters that cannot KO until the last hit of special 2 don't make for great specialists, but I was wondering if you're aware that damage over times, or bleed at least, can allow these characters to KO with earlier hits of their special 2. I bring this up because I think Batman, Ninja, Nightwing, and Lord Joker have a lot to gain from this as specialist, and the Batman who laughs as a support. Nightwing has easy access to a re-triggering bleed if paired with Batman and Catwoman and or Batman with Ra's al Ghul Scimitar in Quake Engine. Nightwing's special 2 is ranged, has good damage distribution, and the last hit timing allows it to hit an opponent tagging in. Lord Joker is similar, but his special 2 is not ranged. However, I can see a use case for him because there may be some strength in a team of Lord Joker, Batman Who Laughs, and animated Harley Quinn. I know that there's a rather large opportunity cost in sacrificing a character slot or 2 gear slots just to make certain characters work as specialists, but if you're particularly fond of them, as I am with Batman, Ninja, Nightwing, and his special 2, then it may be something to consider."
Yeah, so I'd love to see footage of this, because the only times that I've seen where I thought mistakenly that one of these guys who could only knock out on the last hit was knocking them out earlier, it wasn't from their special, and it wasn't from damage over time. It would be from something like if somebody had Enchantress and had launched some skulls, or it was Master's Death Cart, where you can, if they're still rut falling while you're in the middle of your special 2, like a really big hit of the middle that normally doesn't knock them out, so it brings them down to like 1 health, and then one of the pitter patter things from Master's Death Cart knocks them out, then it does, and it looks, wow, we were able to do it.
And I think that speaks to sort of, I guess I'm not 100% sure what they mean. I'm assuming they mean if they're already experiencing damage over time, that like the combination of the damage over time and the special damage can make them go to 0 health instead of 1. But I'd be
interested. I don't think so. I still don't believe it. I'm willing to be wrong. That's why I want to see the footage.
But I assume that's what they mean, right? Because otherwise, the damage over time triggering after the special wouldn't work. But my understanding of it is that they would both reduce to 1 health. That neither of them, the way that both of them are programmed, unless they somehow tick at the same time, right? And they override each other.
Maybe I'm not playing enough with that particular outcome in mind. I just haven't seen, I don't think I've seen that possibility that happen, but I don't know if I've been sort of leveraging enough to see that more often.
Yeah. So we might need to test that potentially.
Yeah.
But also, if somebody else would test it and
either show us the footage.
Footage ideally, but testing it and just verbally confirming it too would potentially motivate us to test it. You're getting some sort of notification then. Yeah, hopefully that wasn't too loud on the footage. Yeah. Anyways, the audio track.
So do we have time for another one, or are we going to save that for next week?
You know what? I think this is as good a point as any. We're just about at 30 minutes.
Oh, maybe this just one quick question, because I feel like it's time sort of sensitive. Mm-hmm. I was thinking time urgent. No.
Somebody commented and they said, "Hey, BDC here, how do you defuse a bomb?" I really, urgent response is appreciated. No. So Thomas Stewart 9982 said, "Hey y'all, just wondering if you have any tips for climbing online to get Black as Night Flash this week, as I doubt he'll be available anytime soon besides this week. And I have my Black as Night units pretty heavily invested in, haha. If you have any tips for credit farming besides just farming bonus battle six, please do tell. I just got back into the game recently after a few years." So
two questions there. I'm only going to answer the first. We might save the second part for next week, or if we remember.
Yeah.
But the key really is, how do you get higher online? If you need to ask, then I'm going to assume certain things about your account. If you need to ask and you haven't figured it out yourself, I'm going to assume that you don't have enough gear to optimize your characters. Mm-hmm. So what you need to do is play with low enough characters that opponents don't have a lot of gear. Trying to maximize the number of points by both getting the most battle points per fight and by getting your bonuses so that you finish the ladder typically is for higher level fighting. So if you're already prepared, you've got a good team, you've got good gear, that's when you should be trying to say, "Hey, I want 5,000 each time, and I want to get the bonus for an ultimate ladder." If you cannot do that, then you're almost better off putting in volume so that you get the bonuses, but that you're also more likely to win the fight and not waste your time in long, drawn-out fights that you lose. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that might mean playing with... you could do it with some silvers. You could do it with some low-level golds. I would not get anywhere close. Like, Elite 1 or 2 would probably be the most, but what you really want to do... All right, so that's one option. The other option that... all these options you can combine, I think. You have to have lots of gear yourself. You need to create an advantage that's more than just stat matchup from the game, right? So if your stats are similar, the way the game counts it, I think it was, what was it, like 60, 30, and 10, then you're going to be at disadvantage because AI has some advantage in the fight and their stats will escalate so that by the end of your ladder, they will be outmatching you in stats.
Yeah.
So you want to take advantage of the things that give you an advantage without matching you against stronger opponents. That would be gear. That would be really good synergistic teams. The classic ones,
passives.
Red. Yeah.
All sorts of passives. Any stat boosting passives, pretty much.
Right. So Red Sun and Flashpoint to me are the two best teams that if you didn't have a lot of gear would still be a good way to... give yourself a better chance of winning, as long as you don't push your stats so high that you end up facing teams that are more likely to have a lot of gear that will give them the advantage over you.
Yeah. So there we go.
Good luck.
Good luck. Fingers crossed for you. So that brings us, I think, to a natural stopping point for this episode. To finish up, we'd like to give a huge thank you to our lovely patrons on Patreon.
That would be Michael DeVries, Irvin Ruiz, Hoshi127, and Nora. I keep on wanting to say Norma. I apologize. Nora Klimek, who are supporting us on the credited level, and 5x5, who's supporting us on the gratitude level.
So there we go. Thank you so much for your support, and thanks so much to all of you for watching. We'll see you next time.
Komoda.